Welcome to El Talon John's La Liga Weekly. This music's a bit jolly for our Barca fans, isn't it? Actually, it doesn't matter. I'm not sure any of them are listening. Poor old Ernesto never has a manager who's won the league in both his seasons in charge of a club been so unpopular. 3-0 up from the first leg, no game plan required. After all, Liverpool have only got Divock Origi up front. So well done to Liverpool for their success. As Jurgen Klopp says, they were flipping unbelievable. I know he didn't say that, but we don't want the red explicit notice next to us on iTunes. Now, Klopp is really popular. If only there were more ex-Liverpool players working in the media, they'd be even more widely loved among football fans. Now, the Barca supporters aren't the only ones in tears. Diego Godin bade an emotional farewell to Atletico after 9 years and 4 actual major trophies. Diego Simeone and Antoine Griezmann were also watering eyed at the press conference. Real men do cry and they don't mind admitting it. For example, I wept when I discovered the difference in commentary fees between 11 Sports and Sky Sports. There were also tears at Huesca as their relegation was confirmed when Valencia put 6 past them. You know those pre-World Cup friendlies where the countries take on teams from the same continent as the ones they're going to face in the group stage? Well, that was one of those. Huesca were recreating Arsenal defence with Shadran Mustafi working his magic. But as we know, Unai Emery has discovered that the formula for winning the Europa League involves collecting as few points as possible in the league in April and May. Alaves are doing the same. The only sticking point for them is that they're not actually in the Europa League, but they're not the only team that seems to have knocked off early for the season. Espanyol 3, Atletico Madrid 0. They should get rid of that Godin guy. And congratulations to Celta Vigo, who received an award for their fans being the best in La Liga. 22,519 of them turned up to see them beat Barca this weekend. That's a whole 9,000 more than watched them lose at home to Athletic Bilbao in January. They were in bad form at the time, and it was a bit chilly. But well done for that Best Fans Award. Oh, Terry, right then, all of that. I'd written all that before the game, obviously. It pales into insignificance compared to tonight. Right, I've got a load of questions about Valverde, but let's analyse the game tonight. 3-0 up Barcelona from the first game. Liverpool, as we know, they will play with pace, they'll attack, they will hit you quickly when you try and play with the ball. Barcelona knew all that. What went so badly wrong for them?
And also, you have to add the fact that Liverpool were missing Mo Salah and Firmino. Picked up injuries in the first half. Robertson goes off early in the game as well. What's went wrong? I have to question the team selection from Valverde. I have to question the fact that this is it's a replica of the performance we saw against Roma last season. Now, I assume, and I was wrong to assume, that Barcelona, the players, would learn a lesson from that performance last season. What I mean by a replica, it was an arrogant performance. It was complacent. I watched the first 10 or 15 minutes of the game. The only player I saw with any level of the tempo and intensity that Barcelona needed was Gerard Piqué. He cleared every ball that came his way. He didn't take any chances whatsoever. He wasn't interested in playing the ball around the back. He knew the first 10, 15 minutes not to concede chances, to give Liverpool any encouragement. The rest of his teammates were knocking the ball back to Ter Stegen. Jordi Alba was at fault for the first goal. He had a couple of mistakes in him before the first goal. Still didn't learn his lesson. And from then on, I think Barcelona regrouped after conceding the goal. As the half wore on, they grew into the game. But then you look at the nature of the 3 goals they conceded in the second half. The nature in particular of the fourth goal is shambolic. By that stage, they were a mess. And it's a replica of when they thought they were through against Roma. They played in an arrogant manner, which is what they did tonight. And then when the urgency is needed, it's so difficult. When a team's got momentum like Liverpool, like Roma had last season, it's so difficult to turn around the performance where you're strolling around, you're being untidy in possession, you think you're going to just go through the 90 minutes and it's going to be a natural conclusion that you go through into the final. To turn that performance around, as we've seen, it's near on impossible. You know, the other team have got momentum, in this case, Liverpool. Liverpool fully deserved that tonight, and it was remarkable how easy they were able to do it against a team that's been so impressive throughout this season, not only in La Liga, Copa del Rey and the Champions League. That was their first defeat tonight in the Champions League. But they deserved everything they got tonight, Barcelona, with the nature of the, I would say, arrogant performance.
So all the questions, well, lots of questions about Valverde. So Talal probably gives it more, gives it the summary. This fiasco can only be Valverde's fault, right? Playing the same team as in the Camp Nou. Completely outplayed, outclassed, out everything over two legs by Klopp. Valverde might be good, sure, but he isn't great. Last year, Roma, now this. Hashtag Valverde out. Opanski, with this result and the manner of our collapse against Roma, I think Valverde should resign. And Jack, this might be a silly question, but should Valverde go? So there's the questions, Terry. Is what do they do? I mean, it's, you know, he's won the double in his first season. He's on the verge of it in the second season, but it's awful sort of car crash, same mistakes that happened last year.
I think that it's due a change, if I'm being perfectly honest. I think the pressure next season going into the Champions League, it was higher this year because of their failings over the last few seasons, the success of Real Madrid, because of the nature of how they went out last season against Roma. It was clear and it was evident, and they stated the fact, the number of players, the supporters, they wanted the Champions League back. And when you have two performances like we've seen, Roma last season, Liverpool tonight, I think next season the pressure is going to be too much for Barca to succeed in this tournament with Valverde as manager. So I know it sounds ridiculous, but I don't think you can make the same mistakes. Playing the same team as the one that got the result in the first leg, it isn't the worst decision in the world based on the fact that Barcelona were better in the first leg. Liverpool got some credit because they were half decent. It was competitive, but it should have been 4-0 in the end. The Belly misses a chance. So you can understand to a degree. What I don't understand is why Coutinho is playing again tonight against Liverpool. His performance in the first leg was poor. His performance for the last, well, this season has been poor. It's getting worse as well. And he was a passenger tonight. You could have taken him off after 10 minutes in that game tonight. Such was his lack of power, strength, desire to work, aggression, work rate. It was an awful performance from an individual player that kind of spread amongst the rest of the team. And for that decision, I would say I can't believe. I thought he was going to be a bit more pragmatic. I thought Arturo Vidal was one of the best players again tonight. He's in good form. So I thought it was a must that he played. Busquets and Rakitic. Rakitic was poor. Busquets was one of the better players for Barcelona again, I thought. But I would have gone with Arturo instead of Coutinho and played Messi and Suarez up front on their own. And try and deal with that obvious early threat that was going to come from Liverpool. Now, there could be question marks again about Sergio Roberto playing right back instead of Semedo. That's another issue. So I kind of feel it was an easy choice for Valverde to make based on the result from the first leg. But I think he got his team selection wrong against Liverpool in the second leg, just by the sheer nature of him keeping it the same.
I'm not going to argue with you about Coutinho. I thought he was awful tonight. Having said that, a player who never gets any stick, I thought, was as bad as anyone tonight was Jordi Alba. I thought he put them under pressure so many times, particularly for the first goal that set the tone a little bit. It's not a player that you often criticise, but I think just being realistic, you know, there was no one who was great. I like Vidal. I agree with you that he brings some of the qualities that they needed tonight. I thought Piqué was good, but Suarez was poor, obviously. But what about Jordi Alba? What about Rakitic? These guys who we normally like so much, of course.
Exactly. We have to be honest, and when we give credit constantly to these players, we have to then be honest and declare when their performances are below par. Jordi Alba was, and the strange thing, John, is as well, is the fact that Liverpool are, they're just going along fumes at the moment, aren't they? They're challenging for the Premier League. They're not being able to rest their players. Barcelona have been able to rest players in recent weeks. I mean, it was the team at the weekends, the team against Huesca earlier on before they played Liverpool. So it does make you wonder where, if players such as Jordi Alba and Rakitic and players of that quality, they're used to playing every 3 or 4 days. The minute they stop doing that, It's all well and good having a rest and recovering, but they like to go every 3 or 4 days, and they just lack sharpness. I mean, it was untidy play. I criticise Coutinho for being what I call flippant in possession, carelessly giving the ball away, not thinking it's a big deal. That was Jordi Alba tonight. You know, the amount of times he gifted possession. The goal was the perfect example, and from then on, it was always going to be anxious for Barcelona. Now, they got to a half-time with the one, but just conceding the one goal. But they came out again at the start of the second half and were slow and lethargic and complacent again. Arrogant, I would call it. And got what they deserved. But Alba was poor. Rakitic was poor. As I said, the point I made about Pique, he knew what was needed. First 15, 20 minutes, he didn't attempt to play out the back. He just cleared everything. And I think that was what was needed from Barcelona. He knew the importance of not conceding early. But unfortunately for Barcelona, Jordi Alba didn't.
What was his game plan then? How did they just approach that like they approach every other La Liga game?
Exactly. 4-3-3 and hope that Messi and Suarez come up with something and hope that he might get a performance out of Coutinho. I think that was really poor to play him tonight. His performance hasn't deserved it. I would have gone, with Arthur in a midfield four, just left the Messi and Suarez up front. And I would have even gone with Malcolm before Coutinho, such as been how poor Coutinho has been. Whether there was a little bit of sentimentality from Valverde because Coutinho was going back to Anfield and playing against Liverpool, but you can't have that at that level. Elite football, you can't have that. Players have to earn the right to play in a Barcelona shirt, to play in a semi-final of a Champions League. And it was the easy choice. It was, you know, a manager of Barcelona has to make big decisions. And while it's incredible to think that Barcelona might make a change, I don't know if they're thinking about it, but we're discussing the possibility. When you do mess up in such style, then it can't be ignored if you're, you know, anything to do with the running of Barcelona.
Charlie, big Barcelona fan. Valverde is too cautious. Can we swap him with Simeone? Although exactly the same thing gets said about Simeone when they get knocked out. Even he will be more attacking. Valverde sticks with the wrong players. Coutinho, now he says Vidal, Sergio Roberto. I'd agree with Sergio Roberto. I thought he was poor at right back tonight. All Barca fans said Semedo should start. Arthur and Malcolm as well. He's made the same mistake as last season. No, he's obviously not getting any praise at all. Now, obviously, pre-match, it was a very different story. And James was asking whether Jurgen Klopp would be a good fit for Barcelona. I know he's a Liverpool fan, James, but he also says it would seem like a natural step after Liverpool. Obviously, Klopp, his reputation has soared again, hasn't it? You know, and as you say, they're going for everything, or they're going for the Premier League at the same time, and maybe, like you say, maybe that pressure is actually quite a good thing on them. So every game's got to be played at the very highest level because they're in such a close title race, whereas Barcelona haven't really been in a title race for weeks.
No, and I think that showed in recent performances and the performance tonight against Liverpool in the second leg. I think also we mentioned Alba and Rakitic. We can't ignore Messi's performance either.
Yeah.
It almost looks to me sometimes like Messi. And it's extraordinary in the biggest games. I mean, his goals were obviously highlighted in the first leg. But in tonight's game, he has matches sometimes where he's barely got a bead of sweat on him. He's never out of breath. He makes the wrong choice. It's almost like he's in cruise control, waiting to pick his moment to pounce, which a lot of times it works for Messi, but he can do that in quite a lot of games in La Liga. He can do it in quite a lot of games in the Champions League. But against Roma last season, it was a similar performance. And against Liverpool, it was a similar performance. It was one where you're looking and you're watching and you're thinking, is he going to wait to the last 20 minutes and then come in, burst into action? And that's a good example of Barcelona's all-round performance. Now, I know they look to him for the magical stuff in every game or big games when it's needed, but that's what he's been able to deliver. But so I remember watching the game against Spurs at Wembley this season, and he came alive in the first minute. He was closing people down. He was winning the ball back quickly. He was making all the right decisions. That's the performance Barcelona need from Messi in these games. That was a group stage game, but he came alive. It was Wembley. He was playing against Spurs at Wembley, and he was playing in England against the Premier League team. It's a high-profile game. But tonight, I'm just seeing him sort of meander around and hoping with the 3-0 lead that Liverpool are not going to get close and he's going to be able to produce three or four bits of magic. Now, teams at the top end of football, which Liverpool are not going to... They're going to try to avoid that. I mean, in the first leg, the two goals, one was a free kick. No one could do anything about. The second, that the other goal he got was a rebound off the bar where he's followed up. So that's difficult to actually physically stop him doing those two individual goals. But every time he got the ball tonight, Liverpool surrounded him. They closed him down. And if you're not at your sharpest, if you're not playing at maximum, then it doesn't matter whether you're Messi and you're the best player that's ever played the game of football. At that level, in that type of game, you can't afford to drop your performance to that much where you're biding your time, you're waiting for the other team to get tired, you're waiting for spaces to open up, because Liverpool had nothing to lose. They were always going to throw everything at it. The ideal situation for Barcelona would have been to have resisted that early pressure, not conceded the early goal, and then pick Liverpool off when the game would open up. And, you know, and then the game's gone. The tie's won. But once you let Liverpool into the game, and then you play as badly as you did in the second half, I mean, the defending for the last goal, I've never seen anything like it. It's brilliant play from Alexander-Arnold. It's a quick play to kid on he was going to leave it and just whipped it in. And it was astonishing that Barcelona had no one near Origi when he finishes it off in fine style, I have to say. That was amateur. It was shambolic from Barcelona.
So let's talk briefly then about what it means for La Liga, Terry. Because obviously Atletico went out disappointingly against Juve. Real Madrid put in a very similar performance against Ajax that we saw from Barcelona tonight. So, you know, we've been very used to praising the La Liga teams for their performances in Europe. But as we sit here tonight, you know, Spurs could overturn Ajax. We could have a Chelsea-Arsenal Europa League final. That's, you know, that's distinctly possible. Again, it's far from a classic season, I'm afraid, for La Liga clubs in Europe.
Well, it is. And while we're on the point of managers messing up in terms of Valverde, I think Marcelino has to take some criticism as well for his lineup, selection, tactics in the first game against Arsenal, because they blew that in spectacular style. With a manager that, again, a great example, trying to be too bloody clever, trying to come up with different tactics because they were playing a certain team. It bore no resemblance to what we've seen from Valencia in the second half of the season, to the extent that when they go back to playing 4-4-2 at the weekend, they romp away to a 5-goal lead in no time whatsoever. I know it was against Huesca, who were on the verge of being relegated, but it was almost as a sign from the players to say, why did you change it? You know, I understood why he played Diakabi in midfield, because there was no Kondogbia, of course, and Coquelin was suspended. But then you have three at the back. You had Guedes playing almost as a centre forward, but dropping deeper. Carlos Soler was playing in midfield three. So many players playing out of position just to accommodate a new tactical system, which he didn't need to do. So Valencia got it all to do. Yeah, you're right, exactly right. This could be, I mean, it's possible that we could have four Premier League teams competing in the two European finals. I personally, as a Spurs fan, hope so. But does it signal a turnaround in the Champions League? Possibly. It's quite strange when you look at the form of the top two in the Premier League. And you could easily make a case for saying the rest of the Premier League is mediocre at best, because they're so far adrift of the others. You can compare the running form from the teams chasing the Champions League. For example, Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal, Manchester United. They're all miles away from the level they should be in terms of the Premier League. But we could be on the verge of, you know, all Premier League finals in both the Champions League and the Europa League. So I think there's some work to be done. I think it's clear there's work to be done at Real Madrid. Atletico went out in disappointing fashion. It's hard to make a judgment. I think not so long ago, everyone thought it was going to be a period of dominance from the Bundesliga because it was Bayern and Dortmund in the final. That never materialised. So I think we have to wait and see over a longer period of time whether it is a change in times from the period that we've had with success, you know, in terms of the La Liga teams winning the Champions League and winning the Europa League.
Let's have a little break, shall we? We'll come back and we'll discuss what happened in La Liga at the weekend and the big news, not unsurprising news, about a La Liga legend who is off and leaving us soon. Welcome back. It's Eltel and John's La Liga Weekly. We're on Twitter. It's at La Liga underscore weekly. And we've got a Facebook page, La Liga Weekly as well, where I'm sticking up some highlights from the weekend. So, yeah, get in touch with us on social media or keep following us on social media. That would be good. However, next season, as we talk about La Liga, we will not be talking about Diego Godin. And we've never had this. Terry, you and I have been podcasting for a long time, but Diego Godin precedes our podcasts. He's off. He's going to sign for Inter. And it's not a massive shock, is it? You know, he's been slowing down a bit. He's 33, 34 next season. But it's you know, what a player he's been. And it's sort of the end of an era that he's going.
Yeah, it's ironic. He's joined Inter, where his partner at the back is going to be Miranda, Gian Miranda. They were the two centre halves that Simeone was fortunate and blessed to have when he took over. And Godin was the perfect leader of the team, the perfect leader of the defence for all the things that Simeone wanted to apply to the methods of Atletico Madrid. I still think it's a real shame at 33. Yes, there were signs of slowing down, but Inter have seen fit to offer him a 3-year contract, making him one of their, if not their, highest paid player. I still think there's plenty left in the tank. And I'm a bit unsure as to why Atletico didn't do more to keep him. So I think it's a disappointment to lose a player like Godin to out of La Liga. It'd be a big disappointment for Atletico. It was interesting seeing what we see now on a regular basis when players are leaving, particularly players like Godin, who's won two Europa Leagues, scored the winning goal that won them the league back in 2014 in dramatic style with the equaliser against Barcelona at the Camp Nou, led them to Champions League finals, a Copa del Rey win against Real Madrid. To see him leave is really disappointing. But you see the press conference, you see the tears. I saw a lovely picture of all the players and staff with Godin, all smiling, and apart from Griezmann, he looked hacked off that they were allowing a top player, one that's going to be so hard to replace. I looked at a picture and I thought Griezmann looks like he's possibly, this before the game against Liverpool, Barcelona tonight, he's possibly looking at it now and regretting the fact that he turned Barcelona down last season to stay Atletico when he sees one of the best centre-halves in the world, who's still more than capable of being one of the best central defenders in the world, being allowed to leave Atletico Madrid. So it's going to be a huge loss. How they're going to replace him, I don't know. It's not just a question of replacing him with his attributes as a central defender. It's everything that comes with Godin, similar to what we see from Vincent Kompany. You know, it's not just about how they play week in, week out. They have a level of consistency that is unmatched by anyone else at their clubs when they play. Godin has still been playing a lot of football this season, but it's what they bring in terms of the work ethic, the mentality they instill on younger players that are coming through at the club. I mean, for Jose Maria Jimenez to have played alongside Godin, is money can't buy that, you know. So it's going to be interesting. I don't see the future being Savage and Jimenez. I don't know who they're going to replace Godin with. They've lost Lucas Hernandez. One friend, I think, is staying. Felipe appears to be leaving as well. So there's going to be a big turnaround for Atletico Madrid next season. And Simeone is quite rightly going to be under real scrutiny on how they can improve on what they've done this season.
JR, you answered his question, actually. He says, Atletico clearly deflated, legend leaving. Patience may run out with Costa. Interesting to see whether Griezmann and Saul will look for new clubs and whether more big money signings are on the way.
Well, there's talk of Rodri as well, isn't it, being unsettled?
Yeah, going to Man City, apparently, yeah.
Yeah, they bought him for a reasonable buyout clause. I think his buyout clause now is reasonable. When I say reasonable, something like 50 million or something, which nowadays is reasonable. I'm not sure why that is, because he's been playing enough time to keep him satisfied in terms of being happy at the club. So there must be something else behind the scenes. Might just be money, John. It might just be a challenge that he needs, and he's not being paid what he should be at Atletico. And he will get paid more money if it was Manchester City. So it might just be that. So there's a number of issues to sort out. Sal, we've heard, is unsettled. I think the Atletico Madrid, the group of players, probably expected to win more than they have under Simeone. I mean, talk about the league title. I just mentioned everything they've won under Simeone has been with Godin. So exactly what I said earlier, the league title, the Copa del Rey, two Europa Leagues. It's not a bad haul in terms of what they were winning before this lot rocked up. But you could argue it possibly should have been more. So I think the disappointing aspect this season will be, again, leading at home 2-0, going away from home against Juventus and playing like rank underdogs. In terms of no belief whatsoever, it can only come from the manager in terms of we're 2-0 up against mighty Juventus. We're going to hang on for dear life. We're not going to attack all game. We're not going to have an attempt on goal. And we're going to hope and pray we get through 90 minutes and still go through. That wasn't the way Atletico should be playing. Their players are far too good to do that. Juventus would have been as fearful of Atletico Madrid as they would have been playing Real Madrid. So it's no longer suitable for Simeone to consider his team as rank outsiders, underdogs, which is the case when he took over. And partly one of the reasons why they were successful, perhaps in the early stages of Simeone's reign, people didn't have the respect for Atletico Madrid. But that they certainly have over the last few seasons. So it's disappointing to see Atletico play in that manner, but we see it so often. So I think that has to change next season. Can he move this team on without Godin? Can he get the best out of Diego Costa again? It's going to be really interesting. So a 3-0 defeat at Espanyol at this stage of the season. Espanyol are not a team Atletico Madrid have good results against in generally. So it was... That's not the reason we're debating what's going to happen next year at Atletico. Overall in La Liga, they've been pretty good. But there has to be improvement next season.
Real Madrid, Steve says, how big an overhaul will Real Madrid need? Cameron, do Real Madrid deserve to have an end-of-season awards night? Who should be the player of the year for them? And Zengrin Yoda, he's in despair. Real Madrid's season was over the day Perez let Ronaldo... leave. So, well, they did win. It was 3-2 against Villarreal at the weekend. But, you know, we struggle to find something to talk about with Real Madrid every week because the season has been over for weeks. So we're just waiting for the transfer activity to start. It's hard to pick. It's a good question from Cameron. Who is Real Madrid's player of the year?
I know. I'm trying to think. I'm struggling, if I'm being perfectly honest. You couldn't argue a case for either of the goalkeepers. Danny Carvajal has missed too much time through injury. Marcelo, definitely not. Reguilón was better than Marcelo when he's played this season. I guess Ramos hasn't been disastrous. Ferran hasn't been his best. I could go on. There's no one standing out. Benzema made a late play towards the end. Bale, Isco. It really would be tough. Modric certainly hasn't backed up his Ballon d'Or with a season, but the performances this season, Toni Kroos, Casemiro. What I'm finding interesting at the moment is the decisions that appear to be being made. Gareth Bale, there was obviously allegedly a meeting this week between him and Zidane, a personal meeting where Zidane was kind enough to tell him he's not going to be involved next season. That misses the issue, but so far, that is ridiculous. That Zidane possibly thinks that Gareth Bale is going to walk out that office, ring his agent up and ask to look for another club. That's just not going to happen. I mean, those days have long gone. There's a long contract there. worth so much money. Real Madrid went through three managers this season. There will be players at that club this season that were waiting for one of those managers to have got the sack because they knew they weren't in favour. Isco probably sat there thinking, I'm going to be here longer than Santi Solari. Now, I know Zidane has got more credit in the bank in terms of respect at Real Madrid because of what he's achieved. But if they don't start off well next season, then Zidane will be gone. And then Gareth Bale will be hoping the next manager might favour him and bring him back into the fold. That's how it works. So that was really naive, I thought, that Zidane thought he could possibly call Gareth Bale in and it would not make any difference to Gareth Bale. That would only be confirming what Gareth Bale already knew. So that was quite futile. I was surprised at that. Now, there are other players. I mean, suddenly Mariano Diaz comes back in, gets a couple of goals, and they're saying he should be kept. So does that mean they don't then sign another centre-forward? Because they're not going to need three. So Marcus Llorente is another one. Clearly is out of favour with Zidane. And this goes back to when Zidane was in charge of the younger Real Madrid teams. When you read about the episodes and the incidents that have happened between the two, he's a player quite, and he's got every right to do so, to think that he's never been his cup of tea and he's not going to rely on him in the future. Which again, I find disappointing that a manager can't change his mind about a player, because we've all seen the evidence this season. He's been unlucky with injury, because at two or three stages of this season, you could argue he's been their best player. You know, he had a really good period around December, picked up an injury, and he surprised everybody. I know I've been banging on about him for a long time since his loan at Alaves. Regular listeners of the podcast will know I'm an admirer of Marcos Llorente. And when he got into the team, it kind of surprised everybody. It didn't surprise me. And I thought he was genuinely going to be good competition for Casemiro. 24 years of age, there's no rush to sell him, to move him on. But it looks clear that's going to be the case, that Zidane doesn't want him at the club. He's going to move him on either on loan, or the club are going to sell him. They want to keep a buyback option, which they've done with a number of players in the past. That, I think, Zidane would just want to see the back of him. But I think the club are realising that Atletico Madrid are supposedly keen. So all the big clubs will be interested in him. It's going to be interesting. How many young players do you need? Danny Ceballos is another one that's going to be gone. But he was there when Zidane was manager when they bought him. So I've no idea where that happened. His form in the past, you could argue he hasn't had the chances he should have had to really apply pressure on Modric and Kroos in midfield. How many young players like Brahim Diaz, Vinicius Junior do you need? Asensio has to do better. He's no longer the young player coming through that burst onto the scene. He has to deliver on a more regular basis. It is really interesting. Jesus Vallejo, the two goal scorers at the weekend, does he have a future at the club? I would argue talent-wise, yes. Reliability in terms of ever being fit, probably not someone you can count on, which is a worry for a player that's so young, that's been plagued with injuries since he's been back at Real Madrid. So it's a massive overhaul. There has to be some big players depart Real Madrid, because you just can't bring a whole stack of new players in and keep the ones you've got. So the problem is going to be moving players on that don't want to go, that might think, I'll hang around. If things don't go well next season, I know it's Zidane, they might make the change again. And then we'll see, we'll take our chance with the next manager. So Real Madrid have got back Zidane all the way. But I'm intrigued to see his choices, decisions. And in fact, are we going to see a massive new Real Madrid starting lineup at the beginning of next season? I don't think we are. I think there'll be two or three. I think they need seven or eight. They need to move seven or eight out. It needs to be big names. It doesn't need to be just the likes of Marcos Llorente, Mariano Diaz, Jesus Vallejo, players like that. It needs to be some of the big names need to kick up the backside and need to be made clear that, you know, that if they're going to stay, then they're automatic first choices. So massive change needed. Barcelona, perhaps we've gone over the top a little bit on how Barcelona have been so good this season, because they're not going to need a massive amount of points to win the league, because Atletico Madrid have failed and Real Madrid have their league title race was over when they lost the first Clásico. When Lopetegui got the sack, that was them done. They never threatened to come back. So that tells you itself. Massive points gap between them and Barcelona the last season. So Barcelona haven't had to be great to win the league. They've been good. They've done what they had to do. But then you see the evidence against Liverpool. Do you wonder how good they really are? So there needs to be massive improvement at Atletico. Needs to be massive improvement at Real Madrid. There are other teams we could put into that category as well. But certainly, I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens with Real Madrid over the summer.
Right, we're struggling to be optimistic about anything tonight, Terry, aren't we? Let's move on.
No.
Let's talk about Getafe. That's, bring a smile to your face. Gav says, Jaime Mata, player of the season outside of Messi? Baudelaire has done an exceptional job, but he wasn't a regular at the start of the season, Mata. Brownie, simple one for Terry. Will Getafe qualify for the Champions League? So they won 2-0 at the weekend. So we've got two games to go in La Liga, and they're on 58, Valencia 55, Sevilla 55. We'll get to them in a minute. What a mess they are, but we'll get to them. Valencia have the head-to-head advantage over Getafe. So
Getafe have the head-to-head over Sevilla.
Yes.
Yeah. You look at the fixtures of the two remaining fixtures for Getafe. Interestingly enough, they go to Barcelona at the weekend. And then they're at home to Villarreal. 4 points gets a minute. That's very possible. I don't know what state Barcelona are going to be in at the weekend. If you're a Barcelona player, it's going to put a real dampener on their achievements this season. They're probably going to get booed at the weekend when they run against Getafe a week or two after winning the league title. So that's going to be interesting. That atmosphere of the weekend against Getafe.
But having said that, they would have faced the kids, wouldn't they, if Barca had gone through tonight? There might have been you never know, do you, what kind of team he would have put out. Now he'll put out a strong team, won't he, against Getafe?
Yep, I think he probably would have done anyway. There's enough time between the cup finals, isn't there? So
yeah,
they can't just knock off completely like they did in the game tonight. So I fancy Getafe to get the 4 points from that. So the simple answer was, will they qualify for the Champions League? Yes, I think they will. Didn't think they would. I've doubted them all season. It's incredible what they're achieving. But when you look at the fixtures of the other two teams as well, Valencia is still to play Arsenal on Thursday. They are home to Alaves, which won't be easy. And they follow up with a trip to Valladolid. So it's possible there that Valencia could get all 6 points, get to 61. So I think Getafe, I think it's well within their reach to get the 4 points needed. Sevilla go to Atletico at the weekend and then Athletic Bilbao at home. And with the form that Sevilla is showing in, I can't see Sevilla winning both of those games. So we're at the stage now where you can compare the fixtures with just two to go. And I predict that Getafe will finish fourth and it's an incredible story that they get into a Champions League spot next season.
Yes, we'll have a longer chat because we're going to do some podcasts over the summer. So we'll have a good chat about Getafe and we'll see what happens. It's just hard to say, isn't it? Because they're vulnerable to people coming in and taking their best players. They're vulnerable to someone coming in and taking their very good coach. So it could be, who knows what Getafe team is going to get sent out to play against Bayern Munich or Juventus or Liverpool or whatever at the start of next season in the Champions League. It's just absolutely impossible to say, isn't it? Sevilla briefly.
Who would you compare this with in the Premier League? For people who are not overly familiar with the La Liga, who would you compare? I guess it must be, mustn't it? Although, yeah, Bournemouth.
In terms of size of club, I mean, the capital city thing, Fulham, maybe.
Yeah, that's exactly the extent of the achievement, which Getafe are doing.
Yeah.
Maybe a Burnley. It would be like Burnley, Bournemouth, Fulham,
it's like Burnley, isn't it? Yeah.
Yep. With the budget, everything that goes against a team since their second division back in the top flight.
Yeah,
and for them to finish where they did, I think it was eighth last season, then get Champions League in the next season with hardly spending any money, relying on 30-something forwards to get them almost approaching, I think, 40 goals between them now. It's incredible achievement. I mean, we'll do more in detail if they qualify, and we round off this fantastic story in terms of their biggest transfer fees and stuff like that. They're on the verge of a major story in European football.
Quick question from Tom. He says, I tweeted earlier that Pablo Sarabia will be one of the bargains of the summer. Reported 16 million buyout clause. I don't know if you've heard that, Terry. Involved in 39 goals this season, all comps. Surely someone's got to take a punt.
Yep, and it's 16 million doesn't sound a lot. They paid 1 million for him from, funny enough, Hetafe. I think 16 million. Sevilla have been working really hard to try and get him to tie down to a new contract, as you'd expect, to then inflate the buyout clause. So if Sevilla miss out on Champions League, then I'm sure there'll be clubs around Europe that can entice him away with a bigger salary and prospects of playing European football. He wouldn't be the first Spanish player. I'm not saying for 1 minute he'll be coming to the Premier League, but I could see bigger clubs in Italy that, you know, might be able to pay more money and you know, a more attractive proposition regarding European football. He could be one of those. So that he would be a big loss for Sevilla if they don't get him tied down on a new deal.
Have you had a look at the relegation situation? So Rai Vallecano are gone, Huesca are gone, and the rest of it, dear me. I mean, before tonight, I considered sitting down and doing a guide to how they could all finish. But put it this way, Celta Vigo are on a brilliant little run, but they're not out of it, even though they've got 40 points. Because they've got 40,
the magic 40-point mark.
Yeah, there's nothing magic about that, is there? Because Villarreal 40, Levante 40. And that's 14, 15, 16. Then Valladolid are safe at the moment on 38. And Girona have dropped in to the drop zone again, 37 points. So they're more than a point a game. But at the moment, they are sitting in the drop zone. So, and then coming up this weekend, but Girona are at home to Levante. And then they've got Alaves, haven't they, on the final weekend. They've split the final weekend's games now, haven't they, between the 2 days. They're feasible. Yeah, they're
that,
easily.
That was,
they're two
that was today.
Games.
I think I've seen kickoff time change twice today.
yeah. Good old La Liga.
4:30, 6:30, and 8 o'clock. I've seen from the same all games being the same. So it's we'll wait and see when the games do kick off. Girona, Levante at home. I mean, Levante. As we said, that magic 40-point mark that we thought was home and dry for Celta V around Levante isn't, because there's been a turnaround in form from Valladolid in particular, which has led to Girona being the team closest to the drop. It's 40 points might not be enough to keep you up in this season. So nope. Celta, Villarreal, Levante need to do more work. It's not impossible that Girona get 4 points at least from a home game against Levante and Alaves away, who've probably saying goodbye to their manager and not being involved. They're not in the European race now. So it's winnable games for Girona. Valladolid have got Rayo away, who are down. They've got Valencia at home. Tricky second game for Valladolid. Levante, you've got Girona away. So that's a big game this weekend. There's an Atletico at home. Tough game. And Villarreal, we thought, even when you saw their performance at the weekend against Real Madrid, the narrative, the commentary during the game was Villarreal haven't got a lot to play for, nor of Real Madrid. And all of a sudden you're looking and you think, no, Villarreal, they're still in the thick of it. And likewise Celta.
Well, Villarreal went down. Was it 43 points the year they went down, wasn't it? And it could be that again, couldn't it, with this, with the way it's going. One last question about the relegation situation. Noir Confidential, Villarreal have some valuable assets in their squad. Which players do you think they will try to keep in the summer, which will be allowed to leave?
Oh, but again, when you look at their squad, I've been critical of Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid and maybe Sevilla have underachieved. Betis certainly have. And I mean, you look at Villarreal, there's no doubt that I would still, with their squad, if they keep their squad as it is, you would still be backing them next season for European football. Yeah. It's that good. You look at the quality of the strikers, the quality possibly could do better in the centre of defence. But when you look at the rest of the squad, and there's always good young players coming through at Villarreal. Chukwueze is the classic example of that this season. The likes of Fornals, they brought Vicente Ibora in. It's ridiculously talented squad to be shuffling around with two games to go, still involved in a relegation battle. So I think if VRL stay up, then they'll keep the majority of the squad. There might be a change in manager. You'd have to think so, because he hasn't got the best out of the players this season on his two spells as manager. Luis Garcia Plaza didn't have much success either. So it might need a fresh approach at the start of next season. But if they go down, then it can be backup playing second division football. I doubt it. Chukwueze, they might be able to keep, but I think they'll be offered good money for him. Pablo Fornals, I think he's got a relatively cheap buyout clause. Don't see him dropping down into the second division. So Santi Cazorla, would he be willing to stick around as Bruno Soriano did when they got relegated last time? It's a talented squad. If they stay up, they'll be fine. They'll keep who they want. They'll be able to spend money, which they normally do. They might have to sell one big name, which they often do to bring in two or three. But if they go down, then it will be the players' decision whether they stay, fight back to get back in the top division, or whether they take the options that they will be offered from other La Liga clubs or clubs around Europe.
Owen Thompson asked too big a question actually to go into. Yeah, there wasn't much of a title race. How does this season compare to others in the last decade? Send us that again, Owen, another week, and we'll go into it. So picking your favourite La Liga season from recent years, we'll have to think about it. It's too big a question to tack on the end. Off the top of my head, I think the season Atleti won it, I think, was a great season, wasn't it? Lots going on. But we'll hopefully send us that again. And when we've got time in the summer, we'll have a think about that. Carl Smith, do you have any information on the broadcast deal for next season?
No, I don't. Do you? No, I don't think we do. It's only
the 7th of May. What are you expecting? You know?
What I would say about this season, I've enjoyed the race for top four, but that's normally the case in La Liga, and I've enjoyed the fact we've had a relegation battle this season.
Yes.
That hasn't been the case with certainly the last two seasons, but this season it's going right down to the wire and it's involving a number of teams. One or two have kicked on lately and avoided it, but there's, you know, two games to go. Even Torreo and Huesca, to be relegated with only two games to go is a massive improvement on what we've had in the last couple of seasons, where teams have been relegated. I think it was a 14-point gap last season between third from bottom and the team that were just above the relegation zone. So that's made for a better La Liga campaign in 2018-19 season.
Yes, we just need a title race next year, don't we? But there we are. We'll work on that, particularly with Real Madrid's transfers over the summer. Right, we'll leave it there and we'll be back with another podcast. So it'll all become a little bit clearer, perhaps, by the time we podcast again. So after this weekend's round of games, we'll do another podcast. Thank you for listening and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.